a very plain man who has made a considerable success of his plumbing business. Since this man has less than average ability in many respects, it is interesting to observe how he has achieved noteworthy success in building up a substantial business, which makes him a man of more than ordinary means and influence in his community today. This man is certainly not possessed of many talents which we ordinarily associate with distinctive achievement. As an employee of a plumbing establishment, he proved to be awkward, clumsy, and not as good as the average pipe fitter. Since he was unsatisfactory in this capacity, his employer tried him out as a salesman and contact man for the business. But in this role, he also showed no promise whatever. Although he had no college training, he had finished high school and could write a clear and legible hand. Consequently, his employer thought he might make a satisfactory bookkeeper. Again, results were not encouraging. Both employer and employee found the relationship somewhat discouraging in terms of results, but the worker himself began to use his head. Realizing first his definite limitations, he took careful stock of his assets. On the back of an old envelope, he listed the following qualities which he knew he possessed. 1. The habit of saving and of handling money carefully. 2. Ability to figure costs on a job with great precision. 3. The ability to recognize superior skill in other men. 4. Persistence in sticking to any task until it is finished. 5. The ability to induce other laborers to work more happily together. With his envelope before him, this mediocre and somewhat discouraged plumber decided to exercise his own judgment and launch forth a new plumbing business in his own right. Using his own savings, he rented a modest storeroom and announced the new plumbing firm. Almost immediately, the best pipe fitter from the old establishment came to him and voluntarily asked to work at whatever wage could be paid in the beginning. Next, the new proprietor looked around and selected a capable salesman and contact man. He promptly found a college boy who was competent in keeping books and handling all correspondence. With good judgment, he selected other personnel necessary to supplement his staff for all the business to be done. As business increased, he added other men to his group of employees. But he always chose them very carefully for one or two special skills which they were able to demonstrate effectively. Having chosen his helpers wisely, he proceeded with his definite purpose of becoming the best and most prosperous plumber in the county. Before long, he had large contracts for several new school buildings and other public projects. He carefully supervised all of the work except the office routine, which he left to his bookkeeper. After a salesman landed a good prospective customer, the proprietor figured all costs and made the bid on the job. In a few years, people outside the county were seeking the services of this plumber and his firm because they had established a reputation for high quality of service and of fidelity in full performance of their contracts and trustworthiness in the handling of other people's money and materials. With a keen eye for economy, the proprietor began to look around for possible expansion of his equipment. Although he was already using a low-rental storeroom for his office and supply room, he decided to invest all of his earnings in the expansion of the business if he could find adequate building space at low cost for the new developments. About 2 miles outside of the city, he located an old hosiery mill building with a leaking roof and nearly all of the glass windows broken out. This ample two-story building was exactly suited to his needs. Moving cautiously, the ambitious plumber inquired of the owners of the building the rental charges for the whole building. He convinced them that it was better to have a steady income from the property than to leave the building idle. The owners first asked a relatively high monthly rental on the grounds that it would be necessary for them to do considerable repair work in order to make the building usable. The plumber countered with a suggestion that they quote him the lowest possible rent for the building in its present state and, to his surprise, they actually quoted a figure somewhat less than he was paying for his uptown storeroom. Acting promptly on his own judgment, he accepted the offer, took his plumbing staff and repaired the roof of the building, and replaced all of the broken window glasses, thus making substantial improvement in the building that he was about to rent. So pleased were the owners of the building with this fine improvement in the condition of their building that they voluntarily gave the plumber a 10-year lease instead of the 1-year lease as agreed for his rental option. This plumber added to his personnel, increased his stock of supplies, and expanded his services. He achieved a remarkable success during the next few years. In less than 10 years, he owned the building in which he operated. added a number of skilled workmen who were quite superior to himself in ability in their own lines, and purchased $100,000 worth of supplies. He also found himself invited occasionally to prepare bids for the plumbing work in school buildings, city projects, and other large building ventures in the various counties adjoining his own. All of this business came to him largely through the unchallenged reports about his work by satisfied customers. There is nothing very unusual about this success story of the plumber, except the unusual limitation of his own talents. He was not smart enough to keep his own books, to sell his own services, or to make a good employee in a small city plumbing shop. Employed as a pipe fitter, he was slow, clumsy, and about the worst man on the job, even though he did his best. He had the sound sense, however, to see potentialities in the plumbing business and the opportunity to use his own talents effectively in getting other people to cooperate with him. By concentrating his attention on his definite major aim, he organized all his individual efforts toward achievement of a prosperous and serviceable business, which would enjoy the confidence of the people and deserve an adequate financial reward. This man of modest talents is still operating a thriving business in the old hosiery factory, and his reputation is known to contractors, businessmen, and housewives in about 5 southern counties. The housewives often comment on the fact that they do not mind paying the plumber when he does a thorough job, and the company always has a competent man at work on the assignment in less than half an hour from the time they phone for help. Most of the facts here related transpired during the treacherous period from the last World War up to the present, and the business has survived all depressions with sound reserves and ever-increasing patronage. Now who says that there are no more opportunities in America for ambitious men? This plumber, who had very limited talents, only a high school education, and no funds whatever but the earnings from his own labor, has demonstrated the value of a definite purpose and the value of organized individual endeavor. If Andrew Carnegie has stressed one point more than all others in his analysis of this philosophy, it is the fact that success is the result of organized individual endeavor. He has emphasized the importance of the mastermind principle as the chief means of developing personal power through organized effort. He acknowledged that he owed his stupendous achievements to his ability to pick men for his mastermind group. While it is true that organized individual endeavor consists of the application of all the other principles of success through proper coordination and the right combination for each circumstance, there is no escape from the fact that the organized individual endeavor principle is the one which assumes the greater importance in connection with all extraordinary undertakings. As a fitting climax for this chapter, I wish to present an old motto which aptly describes an important point in connection with organized individual endeavor. It is, plan your work and work your plan. Nothing can take the place of persistence and continuous application. These are so important that men have been known to succeed through their application alone, without any knowledge of the other principles of success. But be sure that your plan is organized and definite. Americanism is a system of highly organized endeavor. Every person who claims any portion of the bountiful privileges available to the citizens of this country should have a clear picture of the highlights of the American way of life. Never, in the entire history of the world, has any other nation provided people with as many personal privileges as we of the United States enjoy. These privileges were purchased with the blood of our forefathers. They have been protected for us with the blood of our own, through wars that were waged solely to protect the principle of organized individual endeavor through which we maintain the right of our personal privileges. The people of the United States have the privilege of moving on their own personal initiative because of a form of government which represents the last word in organized individual endeavor. The leaders of American industry understand the value of the principles demonstrated in this book by such men as Andrew Carnegie, Thomas A. Edison, and Henry Ford. It was by the application of these principles that they attained their leadership. And it reflects enduring credit to their spirit of fairness and their soundness of judgment to know that they encouraged their associate workers in acquiring a working knowledge of this philosophy. Thus, we live in a country which is geared from stem to stern with an economic system that encourages its people to promote themselves into the highest stations in life that their personal skill and education and experience merit. I doubt that there could be found in the entire system of American industry a single leader worthy of the privilege of leadership who would not and does not go out of his way to encourage his associate workers to maintain and exercise to the fullest his privilege of personal initiative. The system has been arranged to provide every conceivable form of reward for the encouragement of personal initiative. From these well-known facts, we may safely assume that the leaders of American industry believe in giving to every worker, no matter what may be his job, both the privilege and the incentive to develop and use his personal initiative. They believe in it because they know that American industry owes its enviable position to the American way of life, through which every citizen is encouraged to promote himself through his own initiative. The time is at hand when the people of this country need to appropriate Andrew Carnegie's gift and put it to work. The time is appropriate because the American way of life is being destroyed from within our own borders. The major attack is against American industry, which, incidentally, is the very jugular vein of the American economic system. The American people are at war, whether they recognize this fact or not. Their enemy is resorting to tactics made popular by Adolf Hitler. The substance of such tactics is to divide and control the people of America. In unity there is strength. The time is at hand when the people must recognize this fact and do something about it or perish. What can they do? America is now engaged in a great national defense program. The major need in connection with this program is cooperation and personal initiative among those who are engaged in any branch of American industry. The life of our country depends upon such cooperation. Here, then, is an opportunity for the reader of this book to promote his own interests and at the same time make his contribution to the program through which the right of personal initiative is being protected for the people of America as a whole. The present emergency calls upon every person to make some sort of contribution for the preservation of the American way of life. What greater service could any man render at this time than that of helping to fight the enemy which seeks to control and divide the people? The philosophy of success set forth in this book is perfectly suited for this purpose. It not only helps to protect Americanism, but it is Americanism in a highly organized form. Moreover, it is presented in a form which enables the individual to appropriate and use it for his individual benefit. At the same time, he is able to use it as a means of wiping out the subtle forces of destruction which are dividing and controlling the people of America. In this way, we can master the subtle enemy with which Adolf Hitler threatened to mop up America from within. Let us fight fire with a stronger fire. Thus, we may not only promote the individual interests of the American people, but also help save the soul of the American way of life. At the present pace at which this country is piling up indebtedness for the coming generations, the youth of America will need every possible form of knowledge and a complete mental discipline with which to meet this emergency. Moreover, no one knows at the present where our national debt will end, but this much we do know. The people of America, both this and the generations which follow ours, will need a sound philosophy through which to increase their earning power. Income taxes and other forms of taxation have already become a heavy burden for many, although apparently the present tax burden is mild when compared with that which seems inevitable for the future. Even though we manage to save the American way of life from total destruction, we will nevertheless be confronted still with a heavy tax burden that will deprive the people of the freedom of mind and the liberty they have known in the past. From this conclusion, there is no escape. Let us face these facts and prepare to meet them, not by restricting free enterprise and personal initiative by law, but by teaching the people how to add to their income by the fullest possible exercise of their personal initiative. To this end, I offer my contribution through the philosophy which has served as the foundation of every success this country has known. This philosophy offers our own and future generations a practical means of meeting the heavy tax burdens that are sure to overtake us with an increase of our incomes. It is neither likely nor probable that we shall wish to meet the heavy taxation of the future by discarding our automobiles, radios, and modern conveniences of life. Nor is it proper that we should do so. America still is the richest and the greatest nation of the world. But our riches will not begin to meet our tax bills, let alone maintain our present standard of living, Unless we stop the present trend toward a desire for something for nothing and find new and better ways of rendering useful service. As Andrew Carnegie has so well stated, the riches of America consist of a combination of our natural resources and the education, experience, and skill of the leaders who have developed these resources. The only difference between this country as we know it today and the time when it was discovered is that which has been added to it through the personal initiative of the men who have developed our American industry and helped to build the foundation stones of Americanism. Riches, in their highest form, consist of useful service. Let those of us who seek personal riches remember this truth. Let those who pass laws restricting personal initiative also remember that such laws destroy the major source of all riches. What the people of America need now and in the future is encouragement in the exercise of their rights to free enterprise and personal initiative, not a penalty on these privileges. A prophet foretells the future by looking into the past. We need not be seers to look back over the past few years and see, as clearly as we can see the sun on a cloudless day, that we have been drawn into a whirlpool of forces which have already gone far toward the destruction of the American way of life entirely. One by one, the foundation stones of Americanism have been undermined, until not one of them is standing on solid ground today. We know how these foundation stones are being destroyed. We know who our enemies are. We have uncovered the technique with which the American way of life is being rapidly destroyed, and we know, beyond all possible doubt, that nothing but organized individual endeavor can save us from the loss of much that we, as Americans, cherish. The particular form of organized individual endeavor that we need now is the organization of His Majesty the King, known as public opinion. When the sovereign will of the people speaks, the whole world stops, looks, and listens. This sovereign is still the master in the United States, but even kings lose their power when they neglect to use it. Right now, our sovereign needs a new awakening. He has gone to sleep on his job. Meanwhile, the enemies of the sovereign are active. They are gnawing away at the king's throne. Applying the foreign-born principle of dividing and controlling, these enemies have centered their attention upon the major foundation stone of Americanism, the American form of government, and they are dividing it against itself. So the time is at hand when the people of the United States must decide, and decide now, whether or not they wish to give up their right to the exercise of personal initiative. Upon that decision will depend the future of Americanism. We must act. We must plan our work and work our plan through the exercise of organized individual endeavor, as detailed in this chapter. You have important work to do today. To do better work, think of it as a process of creating, building, growing, and climbing. Nothing can take the place of work except failure. About the author. Napoleon Hill was born in 1883 in Wise County, Virginia. He worked as a secretary, a mountain reporter for a local newspaper, and the manager of a coal mine and a lumber yard, and attended law school before he began working as a journalist for Bob Taylor's magazine, a job that led to his meeting steel magnate Andrew Carnegie, which changed the course of his life. Carnegie urged Hill to interview the greatest industrialists, inventors, and statesmen of the era in order to discover the principles that led them to success. Hill took on the challenge, which lasted 20 years and formed the building block first for The Law of Success, also published by Tarcher Peregrie, and later for Think and Grow Rich, the wealth-building classic and all-time bestseller of its kind. After a long and varied career as an author, magazine publisher, lecturer, and consultant to business leaders, the motivational pioneer died in 1970 in South Carolina. This is Joe Ackman. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Wishes Won't Bring Riches by Napoleon Hill. This program was directed by Danny Campbell. Executive producer, Dan Musselman. Text copyright 2018 by the Napoleon Hill Foundation. Production copyright 2018, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.